Coming up next, Howard Holly presents Against All Odds. And now your host, Howard Holly.
Good morning, and welcome to another lovely Saturday morning. My name is Howard Holly. I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Weitzel. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Howard.
So, Kristen, I know you say I keep saying beautiful Saturday morning, but I can't change.
I know. It's going to be a hurricane out there. It's a beautiful Saturday morning.
That is likely to happen. So, Kristen, let's talk about our guest last week, Katrina Townsend from the Flagler School District. A very interesting story, to say the least.
She did have an interesting story. So she's a director of student services for Flagler County Schools. And a lot of people, I think, didn't know her backstory, but she was a teen parent. She had gotten pregnant at 16 and then had her daughter at 17. But her parents really supported her and gave her that foundation and helped her stay involved in school. They gave her the support she really needed to be successful. And I think what is really important is that everyone takes away from that it's so important to mentor and to be there for people who might not be on the right path or may have made a bad decision and now they need someone there to help them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the commonality about Katrina's story and some of our other guests, you know, such as Jacob Oliva, who's the superintendent and Katrina's boss, and Dr. Carl Eaton at Daytona State College, is sometimes you make a mistake, you get headed in the direction you hadn't intended and you don't want to go. And it doesn't mean you have to keep going that way, that you can get back on track and end up with a life completely different from where you are at that time.
Yeah, there's always time to make changes and there's always time to make things right. It doesn't matter how old you are and how many wrong choices you've made. You still have that time to turn it around and do things that are right for you.
Yeah, I think Katrina's story, I'm hopeful that we can find a way to get that episode in front of, you know, girls who may be facing a similar situation. And, you know, sometimes you sort of think you're the only one that's ever had that problem, or you know, you can't survive it or you can't overcome it. And I think hearing stories like Katrina and her success graduating on time from high school and then going on to college and just, you know, and just excelling is a great story.
Absolutely.
So, as always, we try to continue this concept of having people on our show who are, through their lives, validate the concept that, you can overcome obstacles in a way that can allow you to be successful in a myriad of ways. And our guest today certainly meets that criteria. Her name is Julie Mathis, and Julie is the broker and owner of East Coast Premier Properties here in Palm Coast, actually in Flagler County. And she is also the site of the Hammock Island Welcome Center. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Howard.
It's great to have you here, and I appreciate your joining our show. Julie, I know you're from Florida, I think from the Gainesville area, correct?
I was born in Gainesville and grew up in St. Augustine, okay. And then later years in DeLand, Florida.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about your background. What was it like?
Growing up, I had a great mother. There was a lot of humor in our family. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our father passed when I was 8 years old, so it threw my mom and the four of us kids into a little bit of a disarray. But she was a very steady parent, and we had a great upbringing, good grandparents, a lot of family dynamics that went on that supported all of us, not without problems. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my mother continued throughout my life to be my best friend mm-hmm. and my mentor.
How did that family dynamic mold you and shape you?
Well, for several years, it was my mother and us four kids. And there's four of us. We're all 2 years apart, my sister Suzanne, myself, Robbie and Mark, and Suzanne was in charge of making sure we all did what we needed to do, and I was in charge of making sure we all laughed and played with the boys. So, you know, it was a family effort to stay together and grow together.
Okay, great. Now, I know you ended up moving out of Florida, and tell me, how did your career and your life, you know, move from high school on?
Well, I went to college and did not finish college. I ended up getting married. We moved to Kentucky, mm-hmm. and my son's father joined the military, so we went overseas for 10 years. And I was doing volunteer work at the schools, taking care of the kids at the
Now, where were you
clinic.
Overseas?
Spangdahlem, Germany.
Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
so we spent 10 years there. And they
10
had
years.
10 years.
10 years in Germany.
That's right. Wow. 10 years. Traveled all over the world. My son went to German school. We were very prolific with the languages.
Wow.
And we lived on the
sprechen
economy.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Yeah. Sprechen ein bisschen Deutsch. Yeah. But we lived on the economy. We didn't live on base. So we lived among the area locals and really, really enjoyed it. Got a great education, well-rounded with the traveling and just the different cultures.
Now, I believe from a conversation you and I had, you did some business activities while you were in Europe.
I did. I accidentally fell into it, and my life changed. I had a gentleman from Pakistan. We used to have these big gatherings from people from all over the world, different things, housewares, art, carpets, you name it, and they'd have one of the jet hangars. And it would be a big fair, and I saw these handmade carpets, and I was negotiating on one because
handmade from Pakistan.
Yes, and we were living off base, and so the floor, we were in a basement of a house, and it was very cold, and so I was negotiating, and the fellow said, "I'll give it to you if you come work for me," and I'm like, "Well, what would I do?" And he's like, "You're a natural. You need to sell carpets." And I'm like, "I don't know anything about carpets," but he proceeded to teach me, and I did that for about a year and a half. And then I was at a trade fair in Yugoslavia, and I saw grandfather clocks. So I said, "Oh," I started negotiating on those. And the owner came up and said, "You need to come work for me." And I'm like, "What is it with all you people? What do you want me to do?" And he's like, "You're a natural." So I went into business with this German man. He and I started opening up gift stores that had all kinds of cuckoo clocks, wall clocks, grandfather clocks, and gift items. And his father was the owner, but he and I each had a certain percentage.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time, within 5 years, we had three stores and we were doing all the trade fairs around Europe. And that's where I learned business.
Well, you made a transition from essentially being a housewife and a homekeeper to moving into business. And
I did.
It seems as if it was almost accidental, but you warmed to it rather quickly, didn't you?
Well, interestingly enough, when my son was born, his name is Benjamin Gabriel Rossi. I call him Gabriel or Bo is his nickname. When he was born, I didn't want to go back to work. I wanted to stay home. So I said, "Well, how can I do this?" Mm-hmm. And I called my sister and she says, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing." She was married to a minister at a time. And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" She said, "I'm cleaning houses." I'm like, "Oh, well, what do you do?" She's like, "Julie, clean the houses." And so I actually went back to my job and went to the legal department, talked to everybody, and I picked up four jobs. And so I started cleaning. And within months, I had two women working for me, and we were cleaning.
And this was also in Germany?
Nope. This was in Kentucky.
This was before you went?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that was my first real business that I didn't realize it at the time because I just thought I was cleaning houses.
Right.
But I was providing jobs.
Yep,
I was providing wages for families and that type of stuff.
Yep.
So that's really where it started.
And then you ended up with East Coast Premier Properties in, I think, 2002?
Two.
So you've gone through this recession, the Great Recession and everything, and come through on the other side.
I did.
What would you attribute that success to?
Honesty, tenacity, love for others, and fun, because business is fun to me. And especially when you're providing a service and helping others, and sometimes their biggest purchase, most of the time, is their house.
Oh, and it's so important to them.
One of my greatest sales was a $23,000 little wood frame house in Valdosta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our last Air Force base we were at. And it was a woman who was in her 60s buying the house for her mother in her 90s. And it took me 6 months to get it. And it was actually owned by a two-star general from the Pentagon who called me, who knew me from Europe. And it was one of the greatest sales I ever made. And I think my commission was $600 and I gave it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And was
it the greatest sale because of what it meant to them?
Because of what it meant to them and what it meant to me to give just as good a customer service to a house that was only $23,000. And
as compared to $200,000 or $2 million.
Or $2 million.
It just
didn't matter. And
right.
when we were in that closing room, they both cried. They were so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And the military man actually flew down. It was his mother's house, and she was in a nursing home. And so it reminded me consistently to always take care of others, always give good customer service, and always be kind.
Yeah, we had one of our guests, Santos Rodriguez, talked about, you know, he's in Palm Coast Transportation and he has limousines and you know, and town cars and moves people around. But he says that isn't the business. The business is helping people do what they need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like what you're saying is your business isn't about just selling homes. It's about making dreams come true.
Absolutely.
Right? Great. So we're going to take a break and listen to our sponsors. Then we're going to come back and continue our conversation with Julie Mathis of East Coast Premier Properties. My name is Howard Holly, and we will be right back.
Howard Holly Presents Against All Odds is being brought to you in part by Touchpoint Alliance. Touchpoint Alliance, a global alliance for communication excellence, headquartered here in Palm Coast, provides end-to-end communication solutions that help colleges, universities, and associations acquire, retain, and grow their customer base. Visit us at www.touchpointalliance.org or for a free consultation, call us at 386-283-5906.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Against All Odds, How Successful People Overcome Adversity. My name is Howard Holly. I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Weitzel, and we're here with our guest, Julie Mathis. And Julie, we've just talked about a very interesting circuitous route that you took to be where you are today, the broker and owner of East Coast Premier Properties. But, you know, as I've said on this show many times, I don't believe that the routes that we take to success are paved with the things that we do easily or that come naturally to us, but that in fact it's how we overcome, go around obstacles and barriers that we learn from, right?
Yes.
So with that as a premise, you know, let's talk about how you and what you've had to overcome to be where you are today. And I want to start that first with a question. Based on what you shared prior to the break, do you consider yourself to be successful, and how do you measure success? And then let's talk about the challenges that it took you to get there.
Okay. I do consider myself successful. I have not only created jobs in our county, but I purchase everything in our county. I provide a way for families to be able to take care of themselves, and I mentor people, I volunteer, and I think at the base, if you ask me, the one thing that has made me successful is that I'm just Julie. Mm-hmm. I'm just myself. Mm-hmm. And I like people and I like to help. Mm-hmm. And I've created a world, or my world, where I can do that with others. Mm-hmm. And do it with ease.
Good. Good. Great. So let's talk about the adversities that you faced to achieve that, because what you're saying is it's what you're doing for others that brings you the greatest value.
Yes.
And the greatest worth. Yes. To your life. But getting to that point hasn't been easy, has it?
No, it hasn't. In 1999, I was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer and given 4 to 6 weeks to live. And fortunately for me, I had a great mother, and my sister, who was living in Canada, Suzanne at the time, the family decided that she would move down and help us. So she left everything and moved to Palm Coast to help take care of me and my son, Gabriel. And so, and my best friend, Debbie Hagler, was there. So I really had three strong women that were there to take care of me. Mm-hmm. And we never said, Julie's going to die. Mm-hmm. We said, how do we live? How do we help Julie live? Mm-hmm. And so from the very beginning, I had a massive support system. Never ate normal food, did a raw vegan juicing diet. Found a oncologist who believed in alternative medicine along with chemo. And so I did chemo. And at the time when I was diagnosed, I was working at Hammock Dunes. I was in charge of, with another woman, of resales in Hammock Dunes. And it was, that was a very interesting route too to take, because, Jay Gardner, the president of Hammock Dunes, was friends with my uncle when he was mayor of Fort Myers. Jay was a city planner. So we knew each other. He didn't know who I was until I got sick, and then we started talking, and so then we got to know each other. So I had a huge support system, and I beat it. There was just never any question in my family that I was going to die. Wow. And I certainly wasn't going to leave my son that way. And so I fought and did over a year of chemo, and then continued the all-natural right, and here we are 16 years later. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people go, oh, my gosh, how did you beat stage 4 ovarian cancer? Well, I never considered it stage 4 ovarian cancer. I just considered it a health challenge, and I looked at it as any health challenge would. I just went at it and said, you know, I'm of strong constitution. I can beat this. And it's a, to me, cancer is just a chronic illness, just like diabetes, lupus, heart disease. Disease will emanate in the soft part of your body, you know, your more vulnerable mm-hmm. parts of your body. And that just happened to be my health challenge at mm-hmm. the time.
But that wasn't it. You had to continue to beat it
yes.
over the past 16 years.
I do. And the doctors say that I'm an absolute miracle. I have some of the best doctors in the United States in Jacksonville at Baptist Hospital and also St. Vincent's Hospital. And they are absolutely astonished. They do not know why I'm alive today.
Now, you've had cancer come back in other, but not all ovarian cancer, right?
Well, it's always ovarian cancer.
Is it? Okay.
That was the initial diagnosis.
Right.
So it comes back in different places.
Wow.
And even today, they're just like, I just have never met somebody like you. You must have a real calling on your life. And I do, and that is just to share who Julie is and my life with others.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple, just to be present and to share and help others
mm-hmm.
and have fun.
Yeah, you told me about a friend who helped you get through a difficult time. But before we talk about that, you know, in addition to your cancer, and I guess as you were talking about your son, I assume you and your husband had divorced.
Yes, we had separated and divorced while we were in Europe, and my son and I lived in Europe for another year and a half before I made the decision. And we were having a great time. We could have stayed there the rest of our lives. But what was important was that he grew up around my family and his father and his father's family. And so we did move back.
That's what brought you back here.
Yes, it sure did.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about your son?
Sure. Gabriel is a beautiful human being. He grew up in Germany. Then we came back stateside. He was very close to both his father and I. His godparents, Matt and Debbie Hagler, were his second set of parents. So he had a very good base with which to fall back on. About 6 years ago, he was killed in the Hammock area by a drunk driver, and that stopped my life.
I'm sure.
I thought for at least a year or two, I did not want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I felt sorry for myself. I was angry. I was upset at life, God, everybody, and I did everything I could not to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work, and I was here. So about the second year, I started thinking, this just isn't going.
It's not you.
It's just not going the way I thought it would go. So what am I going to do? So what I did decide to do was I decided to work on forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat on my back porch for about a year, and I wrote everybody's name down that had ever hurt me. And what I discovered was that most of the time, people don't mean to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's happenstance. Maybe sometimes it is on purpose. Maybe they're hurt. And it took me about 6 months to get through that whole list. And then I started working on forgiving others. And that's when I really discovered that anything I had done, or whether it was perceived or real, that most of the time we don't intend to hurt others.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I worked on that for.
Did that make it easier for you to forgive?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm actually a very easygoing person in the
mm-hmm.
first place, so I forgive easily.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when my son was killed, that was very difficult because
mm-hmm.
it felt personal.
Mm-hmm.
The fellow that killed him was supposed to get 10 or 15 years. He actually got 3 and got out with good behavior and 2.5.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he's out there living his life. So it's like this big issue landed on my lap, and what was I going to do with it? It was either going to eventually kill me mentally or physically,
sure.
or I was going to deal with it. And I dealt with this young man. And I forgave him and forgave myself, forgave my son, anything that was necessary in order to clear that space in my heart and
mm-hmm.
my mind to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And today I have nothing but loving thoughts for that young man. I wish him well. I actually saw him once and we talked. And I think that he hopefully will make something of himself. He actually killed my son on his birthday.
On your son's birthday?
No,
On the
driver's birthday. My
wow.
son was born July the 4th.
So he'll every year on his birthday.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
And I made sure to hug him and talk to him, and we agreed to meet. We exchanged phone numbers. I left it to him to call me. He never did call me.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, that whole situation was complete. I did what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him love and kindness, and I wished him well.
Mm.
And so that was something that I learned. And what happened, too, even after that, because before that I had already worked through so much. But after that, my spirit felt complete.
Mm-hmm.
I was at peace. I was happy. And then I knew for the rest of my life what my purpose was. And my purpose is just to be me. Mm-hmm. And whoever comes across my path, to spend time with them, to help if in any manner that I can, if I'm at all available to help. And
the loss of a loved one, particularly early. And, you know, we always say that we never want to outlive our children. But your son was rather young then.
Yes.
And so overcoming that has got to be one of the greatest challenges of life, I would think, Julie.
It is, because I had always wanted to be a mom, mm-hmm. like my mother. I always wanted three or four kids. I saw myself as my mother. I wanted kids. I wanted to raise them. And in the end, I only had one child. And then he was taken mm-hmm. from me a week after he turned 24 years old. But here's what I would share with everybody.
Sure.
I had the same or very similar relationship with Gabriel or Bo as I did with my mother. It was a complete relationship. There was mm-hmm. nothing left unsaid, nothing left undone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We were best friends. There was nothing for me to feel bad about or apologize or regret. Mm-hmm. There were absolutely no regrets. Mm-hmm. And by the way, my mother passed away 2 years before my son did, and that very quickly from an aneurysm. And so that put me in a state of shock mm-hmm. because we were so close.
Yeah.
It was a huge
mm-hmm.
loss.
Yeah.
And then my son came along and he passed. And so I really had to look at life and go, you know, at least two of the most important people in my life are gone. What do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
And some 70, you probably know, you know, Gail Wadsworth, her cousin, Virginia
yeah.
Wadsworth. She's about in her late 70s. She doesn't want me to tell her her age. But,
but you did it.
She's a very good friend of my family, mm-hmm. Of mine, and she lives in Boulder, Colorado. And I go out there several times a year and spend a couple weeks with her. And I happened to be in my office, and she drove by and stopped. She's a little tiny thing, just like Gail. She's a real spitfire. And we were talking, and of course, I was in the midst of feeling terribly sorry for myself and angry and mad. And she says, well, so you are a mother, but not an earthly mother. You're a daughter, but not an earthly daughter. You're all but bankrupt. You're, you know, what else are you going to create and lose in order to find yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for me, I kind of snapped at her and said, well, I don't know. I haven't thought about that. And she got real close to me and she said, I suggest you start thinking about that. And I said, okay, I will. And I did start thinking about that. And she says, one last thing. Can you be Julie without anything?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just be enough mm-hmm. for people who love you and want to be around you without having money, mm-hmm. children, mother, business? Can you just be Julie? Can that be enough for you?
Are you strong enough?
Are you strong enough? And I said, I don't know, but I'll think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is almost entirely all I thought about through the whole forgiveness process,
mm-hmm.
the letting go. Can I be enough for others without anything, just being me? And you know what, Howard? I absolutely am enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Julie, first of all, thank you so much for sharing your story. As we talked, as you know, that's what this show is about. And as I always say, if there's one person who's lost a loved one who hears this, and it gives them the strength to go on, to create so that they can find themselves, to create a new them.
Yes.
So they can find themselves.
Yes.
It's absolutely worth it. So again, thank you very much, Julie, for being here.
Thank you.
As always, I'll continue to see you in the community.
Yes.
Because I enjoy working with you.
Yes. Right? Thank you very much. And it's an honor to be here.
Thank you, ma'am. All right. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Greetings, this is Cindy DeLecky from Marketing To Go, here to let you know that our office has moved. We are now located at Palm Coast Town Center behind FPC and near Epic Movie Theater at 145 City Place on the third floor. If you are looking for branding help, social media assistance, or marketing and public relations solutions for your company or nonprofit, give us a call at 566-3466 or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/marketingtogo. We look forward to creating a buzz about your business.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You are listening to Against All Odds. My name is Howard Holly. I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Weitzel. So, Kristen, what were the driveway moments that you heard from that spine-tingling, goosebump-causing interview we just had with Julie Mathis?
So I think the biggest thing was this concept that Julie talked about, this being yourself and being enough without having anything. So not defining yourself by, you know, your job, your house, you being a mother, you being a daughter, not defining yourself by anything like that, just as who you are. And if you're enough for other people, just as yourself.
I think that's huge. I absolutely agree. And this is the first time that the adversity that we have discussed with the guests is the loss of a loved one. Mohammed Latif had lost his mother and father, but he wasn't there with them at the time. He was at a school up in Afghanistan, was it?
Pakistan.
It was in Pakistan. Interesting connection. So, this is the first time we've had
that. It was Pakistan rugs, right?
Yeah, right. So this is an amazing story, I think. And, you know, again, as always, I say, I hope there's someone who can hear this and benefit from it. And I think no matter who you are, you have to be prepared for the things in life that will cause a loss. And how do you overcome that loss? It's hard to conceive until it happens.
And the other thing she talked about with this whole forgiveness thing. I think it's so hard for people to forgive, and they carry around animosity, and they're angry with everyone, that they're just out to get them, and people did these things to them on purpose. But really, I mean, Julie has found a way that she can forgive. I mean, one of the most egregious things someone could do, I mean, take your child from you, and she's found a way to forgive that.
And forgive
that
the man. Driver, yeah, himself, as well as overcome her loss. So very, very great interview. Certainly good. We've run out of time, and it seems as if we're doing that far too often. We have to figure out a solution. My name is Howard Holly, and you are?
Kristen Weitzel.
And as always, the best of luck to you in the upcoming week in overcoming your challenges both today and tomorrow. Have a blessed week. Bye-bye.